What if My Fair Lady sucked? That's the question posed by On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever, which on a slow day was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean Collier. I'm sorry for editorializing in the cold open. This is number one movie in America. I am here with two people who are really sick of circling this airport. It's Camila Adams.
Hi.
Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
Thank you.
I love when Camila can't remember what we covered 2 weeks ago.
Listen, there were several holidays between today and the last.
I need to get plugged in. I'm like, why can't I hear anything?
Okay. And Robin Hitchcock.
Yippee-ki-yay, again.
Yeah, that was Die Hard 2, a very acceptable 68.33. And it's 2023 of a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Our top rated number one movie in America of those we watched in 2022 was obviously Get Out, our Nonomia number one movie in America. Yay. With a score of 95. The worst was Prom Night.
Yep, wow. 23. Sounds right.
Yeah.
I watched the middle remake of Black Christmas.
Which one was that? Was like early 2000s?
Yeah, it was around the same time as Prom Night, and it made me wish I was watching Prom Night.
I can't believe that's true.
This is the worst 2000s watered down silly horror remake.
Was it also PG-13?
No, I think it was R.
Okay.
But it was just as dull and more like Bad Taste offensive. So,
oh, okay. Wow.
Great.
Well, that actually, I mean, I have never seen any of the Black Christmases, but that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Based on my understanding of the plot. There's room for bad taste.
There is room for bad taste, which is why it's nice that the 2019 one flipped it all the way around and was had a message. The first and that one and the original, especially the original, are worth watching.
Yeah, at some point, maybe.
The holiday season is over. I even have a DVR'd what's that, Jimmy Stewart, something about a shop, the shop on the corner, the little shop,
the shop around
the shop around the corner.
You've got mail movie.
Yeah, I've DVR'd that and I'm like, this might be sitting here till December.
That's a Christmas movie.
Pretty sure.
Okay, I believe you. I saw it when You've Got Mail came out, but that was, I don't want to talk about how long ago.
What
that
is
was
the shop around the corner?
It's the thing that You've Got Mail is a remake of.
With Jimmy Stewart and someone.
Maureen Sullivan?
Okay.
No, she's whatever. Who cares?
TCM HD finally popped up on my cable package. So I'm just like taping that. Yeah. Ordinarily, I would apologize for, you know, us just chatting, but you don't care about this movie and neither do I.
Margaret Sullivan.
Margaret Sullivan. Oh, crap. Whose recap is it? We're going to jump ahead. It was my recap. Okay. The movie is On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever. No one alive, except maybe Barbara Streisand, really remembers this movie or is aware of it.
I'm going to bet that my 92-year-old grandfather-in-law, Franco, remembers this movie.
Well, here's what happened. Either on Christmas Eve or Christmas or the 23rd or 26th, you know, the holidays were oddly timed on the calendar this year. One of those days, I mentioned this to my family and multiple people sang the song.
What? Oh.
But then I was like, so what's the movie about? And no one could give me an answer.
I wonder if it got radio play. That's when this used to happen.
That'll be in the Faxi segment.
Okay.
But even in the target audience, no one could be like, that was like there was a vague awareness that it was a movie. None of us had, I mean, you had heard of it maybe.
Sort of, kind of, not really.
But none of us had any idea what it was. Right. So the important thing is that we recap this movie. That was my job. I forgot. Also, I only marginally paid attention to the film. Same. So, Robin, who is a professional improviser and
probably paid a lot of attention.
Paid more attention than I did.
Technically, I'm a professional improv administrator.
Closer than me.
All right. I have been paid to improvise in my history of time.
And do you know how few people that applies to?
Right. Yeah.
So Robin is graciously going to take this one from me. I'm not even going to time it. Just right. Just tell us what happened in the movie.
Try to do it
okay.
in a minute.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Go.
Okay. So Barbra Streisand crashes to this psychiatry or psychology college class taught by Eve Montan. And she accidentally gets hypnotized, and he's fascinated by her because she's Barbra Streisand, and she accidentally got hypnotized. So he invites her back to her office and reveals in further hypnosis sessions that she has a bunch of interesting past lives, or one past life in particular where he falls in love. I want to say Melinda is her name. He falls in love with her past life through these flashback sequences that he's in his brain just imagining. They sing some songs. Mm-hmm. He starts to haunt her psychically by singing songs into the mouths of other people. And he was trying to get her back into his office. Meanwhile, she has a total drip fiance. And Jack Nicholson is her hot ex-stepbrother who wants it.
True.
And she ultimately goes back to his office. Some songs are sung such that he's able to let her go live her present life, where she presumably fucks her ex-stepbrother.
Maybe.
Okay.
We don't really know. I thought they got together at the end. Did they not get together?
No, that was like 65
she
seconds.
She lets him go. Or he lets her go.
I guess.
He lets her go. She breaks up with Warren.
Yeah.
He lets her go because they're going to get together in their next life.
In 2038.
Correct. Yes. Correct. Correct.
Charming.
Because I was hoping for that bingo square.
Bingo square is it?
The future that we have lived through.
Oh, you're right.
Or a date in the, yeah, a year that we have lived
through
is mentioned in the future. Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention to the bingo square because, spoilers, we bingoed.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. So did we all?
I quit this bingo card, yes. But we will get there. Yeah, that stuff happened in this. It is so impressive to me to be this lavish, this colorful and busy and have so much happen in a plot and yet be boring.
Yeah.
I know it was the style at the time that there's lots of long ass movies that are visually intense that aren't necessarily fascinating, but man, was I never hooked. And now here's Camila to say the same thing and then Robin to say something different.
Right. Yeah. Basically, my reaction was like, this movie, like 20 minutes in, I'm like, this movie is pure chaos. Like,
yeah.
It really is.
There's just too much going on. There's so much happening. Just like to echo what you said. And it's just like, the only thing I found interesting was Barbra Streisand. Like, I enjoyed watching her.
And is that
perform.
Not enough?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like, that's what got me through.
Right.
Like that, because like the storyline, it was just really too much happening.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you got 18 past lives and your drip boyfriend. Now we've got Jack Nicholson rolling, which I'd like to recant my last statement about him and not ever being hot.
Hot. Weirdly hot in this movie.
Right. And I think it's whatever his swag he's got going on. Whatever,
I mean, he's just sitting on a roof playing a sitar.
Right. And I'm like, wait, is that Jack Nicholson?
And then he's like, I thought I was coming for an anatomy study.
Right.
And I'm like, to your ass, sister. I'm like, listen, I am primed for this more than anyone because I watched the movie Clueless literally 100 times. Mm-hmm. And I was still like, really?
You divorce wives, not children.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, this was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's just us.
But Kasia, my daughter, she enjoyed the first 7 minutes.
Camila sent us a video of Kasia dancing, just spinning around. Hills are alive with the sound of Barbra. And it was the sweetest, most precious thing ever, which led to a whole conversation about Camila says, I'm raising a theater
kid.
She's
a theater kid.
You can start now. The classes are available for that age group.
I mean, we just did the whole dance.
Okay.
That's right.
She had her little first recital, which... I gotta show you guys the photos later. Like, she's three, and it's just like five other 3-year-olds on stage, and Kaj was just like, fuck it. At some point, like, she didn't care about she didn't remember the dance steps. She started doing her, she didn't stand there like, duh. She just started doing her own thing. She starts freestyling.
Yes.
And there's this one photo where you like see everybody else is doing one thing, and she's doing this.
Camila was playing with both hands towards her pelvis.
All right. So, you know, this is my kid, and I'm loving it. Like, yes, let's do this.
She is precious.
Thank you.
Well, someone enjoyed it. But also Robin
I mean,
did,
listen,
maybe.
I am ultimately fine with having spent 2 hours of my life watching this movie. I don't recommend it to anyone unless you're a Barbra Streisand nut. I thought Eve Montan was really hot in.
Is that the psychiatrist?
Yeah.
Okay. I could see that. Yeah.
I mean,
he was enjoyable.
Not to conflate performer and script, but that kind of went out the door for me when he started calling her this little nothing of a creature.
Oh yeah.
So fuck you then.
Barbra Streisand.
Right. She came in with all the personality and just like the gravitas.
What is that? Because she has an accent and shit?
Right.
So do you. Right. It's just France.
I think that his deal with whatever her name was, Melinda or Daisy?
Melinda's the old one.
The old one. Okay. I think the reason he fell in love with her was because she was so canny, right? Like she was also psychic and she found a guy who worked at the insurance business and was like, oh, well, I know what ships are going to sink. So we're going to be the best insurance business ever. Right. Also, my favorite scene in the entire movie, when she breaks into the orphanage, or maybe she still is living in the orphanage. It's unclear because adult Barbra.
Right, but smaller.
Shot from the top.
They do forced perspective. I think they had unusually large furniture like in Cats 2019. And then she says, to my joy and happiness, I was expelled.
Yes.
But while she's in the orphanage, she steals the information of who abandoned their kids in the orphanage to then blackmail people.
Dope.
Mm-hmm. Right? I'm like, yes, queen.
Which I am here for. That.
Yes.
Well, I have some context in the facts that'll answer some of these questions. This was On a Clear Day You Can See Forever. I'm not saying that title anymore. It's too many words. Released June 17th, 1970. That is not when it went to number one. It did not hit the top spot until September 9th. That was its 12th week, making it the 20th number one of that year. That was when it went into what we would call wide release today. On June 17th, it was just in two New York theaters, a slow expansion. This is how they did things at the time. Again, we don't have really great money information that far back. It made at least $741,000 that weekend, repeated the next weekend with at least $415,000 before being toppled by MASH, which was rolling out on an even slower schedule throughout that year. Took it in the weekend of, I don't know, two after September 9th. We don't have full yearly charts, and if you're a nerd for this stuff, the numbers we do have are from a limited number of cities. Is it possible that, you know, some Hammer horror was in every drive-in in America that week and actually made more money? Yeah, probably. This is information from 20 to 25 top cities that reported to Variety that then did a thing. It's as good as we're going to get, and we like it. So all I can tell you about how much money this made is it was not one of the best grossing films of 1970, but it was a success. It made about $14 million total. That wasn't close to the top of the chart. Those were Love Story was the top grossing film of the year, followed by Airport, which Robin is really recommends everyone watches. Then Patton, MASH, and Disney's The Aristocats.
So wow, that's Kratz. Like that's 4 out of 5 Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That's how things went at the time. Reaction to this was mixed. I will quote Vincent Canby of the New York Times because I find it very accurate when he called it a movie of fits and starts and added, because the fits are occasionally so lovely and the starts somewhat more frequent than Fifth Avenue buses, I was eventually hypnotized into a state of benign, though not quite abject, permissiveness.
Oh my God, that's such a good description of how I felt watching this movie.
Yeah. I mean,
I was like, nailed it.
It really
criticism. Yes.
Right. It really wore off by about the 90 minute mark. But
I was running out of steam with this movie.
Right.
And then the sequence where he Agent Smiths into all of those people happened. And I was just like, whoa, this is both the most disturbing thing I've ever seen and amazing.
That was fun. I wrote in my notes earlier on, like, this isn't funny, but it's amusing.
Yeah.
Like for a while, I'm like, enough's happening here to make me go, okay.
I laughed out loud several times, always at Barbra deliveries.
Right.
Yeah.
To your point, Camila, this was almost much longer. This was conceived as one of those 3-hour roadshow musicals.
This makes so much sense.
Right.
Because one of my comments on this movie is that they don't sing a song. There's like non-diegetic I can never remember the difference between diegetic and non-diegetic, which one is which.
No
but
idea.
There's
the correct one.
Played over the movie.
Right.
And then the first time somebody sings out of their mouth right. on camera is 57 minutes right. in. Right. And right. I was like, okay.
Before we got to that, I was like, I thought this was supposed to be a musical.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, like, I thought maybe it was going to be like Cabaret. Like, in Cabaret, they only sing in the cabaret. Right. All the other scenes are the music over the movie. Right. So I right. thought that maybe that's what we were going to get here, except for minus there's no cabaret in this movie. Right. Yeah.
There's no compelling reason for anyone to be singing. No, a lot of songs were cut. They even filmed most of that. Apparently there's like the Barbara stands have always desperately been trying to track down this thing they filmed of a future life where she's wearing like a sci-fi suit.
2038.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. There's all of this stuff that was cut, including a lot of musical numbers because the producers wanted that. Barbara wanted that. It hadn't worked since Sound of Music.
Right.
Like a few people had tried to do that and they all flopped.
Yeah.
So then the studio was like, no, get this to 2 hours.
Interesting.
To what you were saying, that's why it's so like, what's happening now? Yeah. Because an hour of connective tissue is missing yes. for this movie, including most of Jack Nicholson scenes. Thanks.
Aww. Listen, honestly, minus I would have enjoyed looking at Jack Nicholson a little bit more. Like, I would have definitely run out of permissive whatever it was for this movie if it were any longer than 2 hours, 10 minutes.
Benign, though not quite abject permissiveness.
Yes.
So this is based on a 1965 musical of the same name, which also wasn't much of a hit. Like, the reviews were okay. There were critics that hated it, but for the most part, the reviews were middling.
Was it a stage musical or
a
film?
Yeah, okay. Stage musical. It ran for less than a year. They did an updated revival in 2011. That ran for less than 2 months.
Good Lord.
It was nominated for 3 Tonys, didn't win them, lost 2 of them to Man of La Mancha and 1 to Mame. This, in short, this has never really worked.
Yes.
Except for the song. The title song was a hit. It was recorded over and over again. There are versions by Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Shirley Bassey, and Tony Bennett. And obviously it was a Barbara Streisand staple as well.
I have never heard it.
I watched this 2 days ago. I can't remember any part of the song other than the words in the title of the movie.
No. Like the tune?
But yeah, that's on a clear day you can see forever.
Yes.
Then what happens?
Well, it was that time period where like studios would write like 4 songs and like let 56 different artists record it.
Yeah, this is early for Streisand, early in her film career. She did already have an Oscar.
For Funny Girl, when with a tie, she tied Katharine Hepburn, which was, I mean, I hope that happens again in our lifetime, but the Academy is much bigger now and it might not. And of course, she said Hello Gorgeous to her Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Aww.
The winner, it's a tie. The winners are Katharine Hepburn in Lion in the Winter and Barbara Streisand.
Oh. Hello, gorgeous. Well, I'm very honored to be in such magnificent company as Katharine Hepburn.
I want there to be a tie this year.
Also,
we'll get into it.
Also, I believe that was her first movie.
That was her first movie.
Yeah, so that's exciting. She's in the Lupita Nyong'o Club.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Funny Girl in 68, got an Oscar. Hello, Dolly in 69. This is her third movie. The Way We Were was in 73. A Star Is Born is all the way in 76. I would have assumed that was earlier in her career.
But yeah.
No, it's a full 8 years in. And she was mostly, I don't want to say she was mostly done, but she mostly shifted to directing and being Barbara Streisand full time by the 80s.
Yeah.
And good for her.
Mm-hmm. And finally, a personal note. I did have one slice of knowledge of this property that I did not realize beforehand, because the song, the Agent Smith song, Come Back to Me, is on the Cherry Poppin' Daddies album that has Zoot Suit Riot.
Really?
Yeah, that like 1993, 1994, there's a cover of Come Back to Me by the Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
That's such an elder millennial thing to know.
Made an impression on me at about 12 years old.
Wow.
I couldn't find this anywhere on the internet, but now that we've covered both, Sacha Baron Cohen in Talladega Nights is just doing Yves Montand here, right?
Well, I think he's doing Yves Montand generally.
Okay.
Like, that's kind of his deal, right? I don't know if I've ever... I've fallen asleep during Z or Zed. I don't know which you're supposed to say. Multiple times.
What's Zed?
Oh, it was nominated for Best Picture in 1969. It's a Costa Gavras movie.
Okay.
And yeah, it's about like a political assassination. I keep falling asleep during it. And also, I think he's barely in it, even though he's first billed. I think that I think he's the person who gets assassinated, even though I've never made it that far into the movie. Regardless, I know him like as a crooner.
Eve?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in college, sometimes when I would work, I would listen to like, you know, I don't want to say smooth jazz because that's not what I mean. Like crooner music, lounge music is what I'm talking about.
Nice.
Lounge music was a thing that I used to like to listen to. And he would pop up in those Pandora. I'm like, that still exists.
Yeah.
When I used to listen to the lounge music Pandora station, he would pop up in it.
Mm, okay.
I don't really know if that's what he's actually famous for.
C'est une chanson.
I don't know. That's what he's famous for to me.
Yeah.
And he was married to Simone Signore.
Here's a question. What does "on a clear day you can see forever" mean? What do those words
I think that it's about
to do with anything?
Okay, so Colin's very clever subtitle for this movie was "Everything Everywhere at Different Times." So I think it is referring to back and forth in time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just kind of thinking that maybe because of the hypnosis that is now clearing her day and she can see all of her forevers.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting list of powers on this woman.
So here's the thing.
Flowers, the telephone,
right.
Past lives but under hypnosis.
I mean, the telephone, thing, that's just radar and bash.
Yeah.
It's just like her whole ESP and she has the power of plants and all that stuff.
That just made me go, I could be watching Little Shop of Horrors right now. Wouldn't that be a better time?
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is just chaos. There's too many things packed into her personality. Okay, so now to like shift away from this movie, sort of.
Please.
The whole, do we believe in reincarnation as a group?
You know, I don't. Ooh. I don't believe in a lot of woo stuff. How about you?
Okay, I don't know.
Okay.
But it's got, this movie got me to think, what if dissociative identity disorder is people remembering past lives?
That is the most compelling thing that I've ever heard about reincarnation or dissociative identity disorder.
And that's kind of like, just, I mean, I'm just wondering, like,
Split would have been a lot more interesting with Barbara. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Exactly. And, you know, that's just kind of the thing that's always been kind of that made me quick. Because my, okay, now we're going to peel back the curtain and get a little personal with Camila. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, she would have this thing where she would always say that she saw, and she was very convinced that she saw someone who had been dead for years. I saw so-and-so at the grocery store. I saw so-and-so across the street, and she was like very serious about it. And we were all just like, oh, you know, grandma's crazy, blah, blah, blah. But then a few like years into it, I started to think, what if she has the sight?
Right.
And we are the crazy ones.
So it's amazing you say that, because my one thing where I'm like, I normally don't believe in this stuff.
Right.
My one thing is that my grandmother called the night before my dad had the stroke that killed him. My grandmother, and she was very close to death too. She called and she was like, put Brian on the phone. And I was like, he's Christmas shopping. And she was like, you're lying to me. Something has happened to him.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, she was close to death, so she knew.
Right.
Right. That's the one thing. So I wonder now, I'm like, is there something about grandmas?
Is there an age about 82, 84 where you just, I grew this ability.
Right. Now I have the sight. Now I.
Or maybe you need to procreate. Like, I don't know. Like, how does this happen?
So much unstudied science.
The boring pedantic science nerd in me would say, I don't know about reincarnation because there's so many more people alive today than there were before, and then it would be, and mathematically it would get rarer and rarer unless
you're splitting souls apart, Hedwig style.
That's interesting.
Okay, and the, you know, at least in my circles, people are becoming more and more polyamorous.
That's true.
This is because they've been split further and further.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And as I get older, I start to worry about things like this. Like, you know, thinking if there is reincarnation, like, I've had a pretty good life.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
I pray I did not do anything to screw that up in the next life.
Gonna wind up like a welder in Singapore.
Like, right, and, you know. Or, you know, just something like, you know.
No offense to welders in Singapore. Sorry, like, if you're listening.
Yeah, yeah.
I doubt that's what I'm talking about.
Who knows?
We don't need to get into my existential dread. When I think about reincarnation, I'm like, that sounds like, you know, when I'm having a moment of existential dread and I'm trying to come up with something that sounds like I don't actually have to die. Seems like one of those afterlife paths that is comforting because you're like, oh, I'll just be back next week, which is kind of how this movie ends. It's like, but that doubles as like, oh, none of this shit matters. I got another one coming down the pike.
I love the dude that gives the university all the money.
Oh my
God. It's just like, I'm going to put my foot all behind this whole thing because, you know, if I can't take my money with me.
Tell me I'm coming back.
Elon Musk style. Yes. Also, Colin loved all of the academia brass or spineless jokes. Like, he was losing it over the, like, at a private university, you have academic freedom, which means you have freedom to go to another university.
Right.
Yes.
It's like, bet. And then, you know, Bob Newhart?
Bob Newhart, already old.
Like myself, he was born old. You didn't get much of him in here, but it is always interesting to see the less he acts, the funnier he is.
Mm-hmm. He's so good.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what, like, pinpoint command of physicality and voice, but the less he does, the funnier he gets.
Yes, I agree.
It's something. Mm-hmm. And I'm clinging to anything in this film. Like, I loved the 70s furnishings. That was fun.
I loved all of Barbara's outfits.
I was just going to say, and I love that she has a matching headscarf for every outfit.
All of it. Just like
every outfit.
I'm like, I'm here for it, Babs.
Yeah. I don't want to slut shame Barbara Streisand, but it says Miss Streisand's contemporary costumes are by someone. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, at this point, she was separated from Elliot Gould, but she had already been married and had a child.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, you don't get to be Miss anymore.
No, yeah. That's Miss Streisand.
And that's great.
I didn't know that she was with Elliot Gould.
Yeah, they were married for like almost 10 years.
Huh.
And had a child together.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know that now she's Josh Brolin's stepmother.
Right.
Right.
And I hate it that I do this, but I usually confuse her like for a split second with Bette Midler, and I don't know why.
I think that's fair.
That's understandable. They had very similar concerts in the late 80s and early 90s.
That's a compliment to Bette Midler, but like only by a little bit.
And I say this because I don't remember who it was. Who supposedly has a mall in their home?
That's Barbara.
Barbara. Okay. Yes. So I saw one man play.
Oh, I've always wanted to see that play because I didn't know about this for like this somehow escaped my knowledge that she had her own mall.
I had no idea
and
either.
I think I literally learned about it on This Had Oscar Buzz, the podcast really? That Sean and I love. And
the dude
is
that
the play
I saw
good?
Yeah, I saw it was Tom Lenk, who Buffy fans amazing. Would know for as Andrew from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and that's the reason why I went to go see it, because it was him.
Right.
And I was like, I had no idea this was a thing.
Right.
It was really good. Like, he did a great job.
You mentioned contemporary costumes, which reminded me of the old timey part. That stuff is just bad, right?
Her past lives?
Like I said, my favorite part is her in the orphanage.
especially the courtroom stuff, because it's so big and so declared, and she's not very good playing that.
Okay.
No, she's not.
But more than that, it's like, there's so much of that in that first hour that I'm like, this is the point of the movie?
Yeah.
Like, this is like, we're uncovering the mystery. And then an hour and 20 in, they're like, oh, yeah, she was found guilty and executed. Anyway, and then we never bring that up again because we're too busy with a condescending Frenchman having feelings about her.
I liked when she was seducing the insurance guy by, like, rubbing a cordial glass on her body.
Wine glass just like down her face, right, nestled in her bosom.
Colin was like, how is this working? And I was like, A, she looks like Barbara Streisand. Yeah. And then I don't know if you guys noticed that I did Barbara inspired makeup today.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
And this is a radio show. No one cares. but also, I was like, Colin, you live in a world where you have never seen porn. This is going to be much more sexy to you.
Oh, Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, this was what, risque for right. her bosom to be yes. out as much as it was, not let alone like she's nestling her wine glass.
Yes.
In. She just like sits them right there. She's like, come on, sailor. What else?
It's also like a comedy thing where like when you think it's going to stop, when you think it's gone as far as it's going to go, it goes like five steps farther. And that's right. what happens with that little wine glass.
This right. movie has comedic sensibilities. It's just not successfully funny very right. often.
I like I said, I laughed out loud. Listen, this movie is very middling.
Yeah, certainly not anything anyone needs to go back to. And you know what won't sell you on a trip back in time and forward in time is this trailer. Beep.
Your eyelids now are heavy and you give yourself to sleep. A deep sleep. You're saying that you're alive in 1840. Very well. I want you to tell me everything you can about yourself, beginning with your name.
My name is Melinda.
Daisy, I've got to talk to you about tomorrow night. Now, how do you feel? You nervous?
Well, I am.
Swell. Now, tomorrow night, before dinner, no whiskey, no martinis. Sherry. It's more feminine. Got it? Oh, and Daisy, for God's sake, no opinions.
What on earth must I do? Scream and yell. Till I'm blue, curse your soul when will you come back to me?
Your courting days are over. You're not going to go on using my head for a motel.
I mean, you've got some kind of psychic power, that's all. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, to you maybe. That's because you're a nut.
Nobody even knows what normal is.
And on a clear day.
I think I get what trailers at this time were for.
Ditto, yeah.
Like, I watched it, I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this movie.
I mean, I'll watch trailers from the 30s that have the like big words, an adventure like you've never,
right.
and I get that, but here it's like a full minute of a song and then one laugh right. line and then something that a critic said, and that it's just very chaotic.
It's also fun, like the 30s movies trailers, they're like, they'll have the actors like step on set
yes.
and yeah. smile and mm-hmm. like starring.
I think that this is like before there was the internet, before there was Entertainment Weekly, they're just like, do you know that Barbara Streisand has another movie coming out?
Yeah.
And that's all they got to do. So
was, did they show these trailers in movie theaters?
Yeah.
In the 70s?
Like yeah.
Before I mean, or after movies?
I'm saying that completely uncritically. I'm like, of course they did. Where else would they because, play them?
I mean, I know yeah. that, yeah, I mean, I guess it probably wasn't on television that it was a normal thing. But like, I mean, I know like trailers because they're called trailers because the way they used to be played.
Was after.
Yeah. And then it also was kind of just like a chunk of them. Like you just go and hang out in the theater.
Right.
And you're watching this in a newsreel and blah, blah, blah. And then.
I mean, almost to this era, someone who's old, just tell us instead of
please.
Us. Speculating, but almost to this era, you didn't really go in when the show began. You went in whenever, and if you missed the beginning, you stuck around and left later.
Right.
That was why the
Hitchcock.
The Psycho thing,
yeah.
because they had to put lobby cards up like, no, you can't walk in after yeah. Psycho begins. So I think these occupied that time in the middle where
gotcha.
Like, okay, I got here half an hour in. Now these are just going to, you know,
right.
run for a while people go and get popcorn, and then the movie will restart again.
Right on.
I think.
I know. We should probably yeah. look into that.
Yeah.
And speaking of Psycho, the guy that he goes in the beginning of the movie that he meets at the bar, mm-hmm. he was in Psycho. He was
that's nice.
He was the detective at the end who explains
mm-hmm.
Norman's.
Oh, yeah. He's never yeah. fully Norman, but right. he was often fully Mother.
Yes.
That guy.
Not exactly.
Letterboxd is called What Nixon Saw and When He Saw It. This is another one of those lists of every movie a president watched in the White House.
Whoa.
Richard Nixon watched this in the White House on 9/11/1970. Is that any way to mark a future tragedy? I think not. I went to that because there's not very many lists because
yeah,
no one watches or cares about this movie.
Right.
So 36. Ooh. I got 36. I like her. There are moments I like, but mostly this reached the I guess I should fold that laundry now level of
yes.
So 36.
48, and it's mostly all for Barbara.
I'm going to go 58. And right. Yeah, like, listen, don't watch this movie, right. But it did charm me occasionally.
If you can find clippets on YouTube, right. That might be more interesting, but you don't need this, the full 2.5 hour extravaganza.
That is an average of 47 and a third, just underwater. Okay. Last time I said that we were going to have new bingo cards and be consistent and be very regimented about the bingo procedures in 2023. And I was clearly lying because right. Immediately we're throwing that out because we realized that this would give at least two bingos. So yep. Here you go. It's a first time watch for all of us.
Yes.
Yep.
And I think that gives both of you a bingo.
That is correct.
Yep. That's a bingo.
So you two are going to have a movie draft together.
Yay, movie draft. We haven't had one in a while.
I love a movie draft.
This is a nice clean break that gives Camila time to make new
yes.
bingo cards.
Yes.
So today we will draw a movie. Mm-hmm. Next week we will have a movie draft. Robin, try to remember what the rules are for those. And after that, we're going to be consistent and regimented. So we're going to do one, no vetoes, whatever we draw goes, then a movie draft, and then it's a...
A brand new year
yep. in February. great. You can't handle the truth. I watched Avatar again.
And I also saw Avatar.
Anything more or less from the first viewing?
All the Sullys kind of suck. I did digest that. I'll give it to you, Robin, in a second here, but this is something I said to you after you saw it. Imagine if they had spent any significant amount of time in this 12-year period between films working on the script. Because with almost no, just a complete nothing of a plot, middle and character, it doesn't matter what happens in this movie. And with that, I gave it a 9 out of 10 and called it the fourth best movie of the year because wow. It's so impressive. If they had even kind of tried to develop this story, yeah. It'd be an all-timer. But Robin, what did you think?
I don't know if I agree. My take on Way of Water is it is a not very good movie that every man, woman, and child should go see in the theater immediately.
This is all visual.
It's just so fun to look at. Gotcha. It's so cool to look at. And I will say my friend Liz saw it and she didn't even see it in 3D and she enjoyed it for cool to look at reasons. And I do think there were parts of the story which I felt I weirdly got emotionally invested in the angsty teen and his whale pet.
Yeah.
As much as I think it's a little weird that they cast a white actress in this role, like all of the like indigenous nonsense of this movie, I'm just pushing aside, which is what white people do, and I'm sorry. Kate Winslet hissing at people.
Yeah.
Loved it. Loved every second of it. And yeah, I don't know, it looks awesome.
It just looks really pretty.
Yeah, I also love that Sigourney Weaver plays a teenager.
What?
Yes!
And I thought...
What?
Going in, I kind of half knew that beforehand. And even after I saw the movie, I in my mind, I remembered that they had lightened her voice a little bit, that they had just used an AI to turn it into a teenager's voice, because that's the logical thing to do. And then when I watched it a second time, there's a scene where the teen played by Sigourney Weaver meets her mother, also played by Sigourney Weaver, and it's just the exact same voice talking back and forth at one another, like one person reading two person's lines in a play, because they didn't change it even a little bit, so it's this 15-year-old running around with an old lady's voice.
Everybody was fine with it when Sarah Vowell played a teenager in The Incredibles. I know she wasn't an old lady, but sometimes teenagers have weird voices.
Sometimes. At least,
especially in stylized, basically animated things.
But your take is everyone should see it, but just don't expect...
Yes. I also want to say, no, we don't have time for this. I was gonna bitch about people being like, I don't like 3D movies. And I'm like, this doesn't count.
No, that's true.
And Liz's point was that she doesn't like wearing glasses over her glasses. And I was like, that's much more valid to
me.
But people who are like, it gives me a headache. I'm like, no, that's not what this is.
That's one of the only reasons I have contacts.
Right.
3D movies, roller coasters, and really long runs. That's it.
Good reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. I'm not invested that much in 3D movies as to where I'm going to get contacts. I'm not sticking my finger in my eyeball.
Well, I mean, you know, before it, I saw there were trailers for several other things that will be really. I saw the 3D Ant-Man trailer and the 3D Transformers. By the way, putting a Transformers trailer in front of Avatar
just makes it look like such garbage.
It's like you're sitting in a steakhouse and before they bring it out, they're like, "Let us tell you about beef jerky for a minute." It's like, how do you sleep at night with these mushy soup robots in front of this gorgeous thing?
Yeah.
No, I don't like 3D movies, but I would never watch this without it. I don't like it because most of the time it's pointless. Mm. For the same reason, if I watch one of the silly ones from, like, if someone's doing Friday the 13th 3D, right. I'm like, great, put the blue and red on my face. Like, because if there's a point, I'm in. It's just when it's like, do you want to see Coco in 3D? No, yeah. I don't care.
Yeah. I think the remake of Fright Night was in 3D, and I'm just like, this is unnecessary.
Yeah, it's goofy when it's a horror movie and the axe comes flying at you, right? Like, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. This is not that. Anyway.
Yeah, surprised to say I'm not going to see it.
That's fair. That's a fair choice.
I didn't enjoy the first one, and I just...
When I say every man, woman, and child, don't see it if you know you're going to hate it. Okay? But if you
have some common sense.
Right. If you are at all Avatar curious, dive right in.
Tell me about some of the other 10 movies.
Oh my God,
movies.
I watched so many movies. I am going to skip over a few because I want to talk about Men, but I want to wait till Camille has seen it.
What a low rating you gave it.
We'll talk about it. I guess the one thing I'll say is that there is a critical bit of effects work that I just could, it just was too silly for me.
What is it exactly that we're looking at here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I ended up, will Camila watch this movie?
Yeah.
I ended up kind of like soft liking Men.
Sure.
But it is, if you time lapsed the viewer's face, a viewer of Men's face, like, you're going to see them go from to a twisted mass of confusion.
Yes. Anyway, we'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about Men later.
Glass Onion, adorable, great. Make one of these every 2 years for the rest of my life, please.
Sure.
Janelle Monáe. Oh, my God.
Yes.
I'm probably going to vote for her for Best Supporting Actress.
I think
so. I'm like, that was amazing.
She nails it.
Because I watched it also, and like halfway through, I was like, huh? And then it was like, okay. So, yes, without getting convinced. Spoilers. I agree that we should get a Glass Onion, a Knives Out.
Every couple years.
A Benoit Blanc.
Like, I don't want Rian Johnson. Like, I would be like, every year, every Christmas, give this to me. But I want Rian Johnson to be able to make other movies.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, but let's keep them coming. I loved The Woman King so much. So much. I got so emotionally invested in it in a way that I wasn't sure I was going to.
Right.
It's so beautiful.
Right?
I can't believe it wasn't shortlisted for hair and makeup. Like, I wonder, there were a couple makeup things where I'm like, I don't think that's historically accurate. But like, who cares? It's so, everyone looks so good. All the actors are so good. I loved it, loved it, loved it. Like, there were a couple things in it where I was like, I'm going to bleep this, but when... Do we have to? Do we have to?
Right.
Right. So, like, that's honestly, like, the main thing that stopped me from being, like, the movie of the year. But I loved it so much. Babylon.
Babylon.
Can we talk about Babylon? I saw Babylon in the theater because it's possibly going to get some nominations for, like, sound.
Oh, it's
It'll probably get a sound nomination and maybe a score nomination, and it will disappear from the face of the earth, probably is already gone.
I think they gave its theaters back to Avatar
because
it made no money and Avatar was doing well.
Right, but... and also, I don't think it's good, but, like, I loved watching it so much. Like, I was having such a good time in the theater being like, really? Really? Over and over again. And also Brad Pitt saying, frankly, Scarlett, you're a cunt.
Wow.
Line reading of the year.
The things that work really work.
Yeah.
And the things that don't work really don't work.
And also, it is as long as Avatar.
Yes.
Or it's like 3 minutes shorter than Avatar. And like, it doesn't deserve that at all. And I hate saying this, but I do think it should have been a limited series. It's very episodic. You can easily break it down into chunks where each chunk has its own theme, but they're all connected. And it just would have worked better for me that way, although I probably never would have watched it that way. And then, man, that last montage.
So I'm going to light Babylon spoilers, because if you haven't seen this already, you're not going to.
Right. Fast forward a little bit if you feel like you need to see Babylon completely unspoiled.
And this is very light. But a character at the end of the film goes to see The Sound of Music.
Singing in the Rain. This movie is basically Singing in the Rain. Like, it has like several scenes that are scenes in Singing in the Rain. And so it's very weird that at the end they're like, remember how we kind of weirdly remade this movie?
Was the point like, these are the events that inspired Singing in the Rain in this fictional universe?
They're the events that inspired Singing in the Rain in our universe.
I know, but they're...
Oh, you mean this is a stylized version of the actual events?
Yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, great. Yes. So this guy's watching Singing in the Rain, and he makes him think of Hollywood magic and the way that Hollywood endures and evolves and yada, yada, yada. And then he, like, has a...
I made it this far in my life not seeing that eyeball sliced open, and now I've seen it.
He either has a vision, or we, the audience, just get to see a montage of important movie moments throughout history, from the fucking train pulling into the station through Avatar. The last one is Avatar.
What?
And it's like... Why are we here? What happened in this movie? Was this just another, like, film? Like, what?
So the night I saw it, I couldn't fall asleep because of other things, and so just sat around thinking about Babylon, and I eventually was like, okay, it has Tron, and then T2, and then Avatar. So for me, James Cameron is very much like, 3D is the future of movies. Like, he's literally said, like, this is talkies, right? He's wrong. But it makes sense to me to include the advent of CGI, include the advent of CGI being good, and then include Avatar as, like, the movies continue to evolve more so than just movie magic. Whereas you're doing movie magic, which is sort of what the first half feels more like, including Avatar, is very cringeworthy. But I think with the other interpretation, it's much more like, okay, fine.
Which is a weird place to end for a movie where the best scene is Margot Robbie dancing on a saloon bar, and the second best scene is an elephant showing up at a Coke party. To end that with a movie montage.
Sure. Is, I have, like, different best scenes, but sure.
What is this movie even about?
It's about early Hollywood.
It's about the early
specifically
Hollywood.
Specifically, like, the late 20s, early 30s transition to talkies.
Okay.
I didn't realize that Margot Robbie and Samara Weaving are separated birth sisters until I saw this movie.
And what great casting there. It's like, oh, we found a better version of you.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I mean, but...
Even though, if I were making my movie, I'd probably take Samara Weaving.
Okay.
Because
I think Margot Robbie is just a star.
Margot Robbie is a star,
she's
and she's great in this movie.
For this movie.
I just rewatched Ready or Not, and Samara Weaving is
she's
underrated.
Great too.
I mean, you saw 12 other movies. Any others you want to pepper in?
I really just, like I said,
Pinocchio
Duel. I want to talk about Duel for a second. The premise of Duel is that you can make a clone of yourself if you are dying. And then if you, for whatever reason, do not die, you have to duel with your duel to the death.
Where did you find this?
I think it's on Hulu or something. Right. And the thesis of the movie is that the pain of being alive will ruin your personality.
True.
Because all of the copies that are made become sad within a year. And, like, they start out as a better version of you, and then they become sad within a year and fall into all the same miseries of the original.
What?
That is an incredibly bleak thesis that made me very sad. And then I learned that the writer-director of the film recently had his wife leave him for Ewan McGregor. And I was like, this is all making more sense. At the end of the film, the main character does not duel with her duel. And I was so upset about it, I tweeted about it, and then the goddamn director liked my tweet. In which I had said down thread, this movie makes more sense now that I know his wife left him. He did not like that tweet, but I am humiliated.
Go.
He also saw that my friend Andy thinks he's hot. I hope that that gave him some solace.
OMG.
Wow.
Yes.
That was a ride.
I saw Wakanda Forever. Angela Bassett is the greatest person who's ever been in a movie.
Oh, he's cute. The director.
Yeah, he is kind of good looking. Emily the Criminal is pretty good. I think that people should watch it, but don't think it's going to be great, because it's not.
Mm.
And Pinocchio, don't get it.
It's dark and creepy and cool looking.
Okay, but I saw
five stars.
Much darker and creepier Pinocchio a year and a half ago.
Which one was it?
The Roberto Benigni.
Oh, I didn't watch that one.
See, I didn't see that. The creepiest thing you'll ever see in your life. And also, I just don't. It's like, why put fascism in your movie if you have nothing to say about fascism? No, is it because, oh, it worked in Pan's Labyrinth? Because I don't, that's not good enough for me. Sorry.
No, it's the banality of fascism. It's that fascism shows up and parades around like it's authority, which is very relevant in our current moment.
Okay, but it's relevant in our current moment, but what does this have, why does this have relevance to the story of Pinocchio?
Okay, you got me there.
Okay.
Because, no.
Yeah. It truly felt to me like they were like, well, we need to have some kind of hook. And I'm like, just don't make the movie. Do something else. Anyway, I know I would watch 10 more adaptations of Little Women because I was a little woman and I've never been a puppet.
I'm going to throw it to Camila before I have 12 things to talk about as well.
I watched Glass Onion. Mm-hmm. Thumbs up. Watch it again. Watch all of any and everything that Benoit Blanc. I love the little peek into... Is it spoilery? Hugh Grant?
I don't know if that's a spoiler.
It's in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that whole thing. I would absolutely recommend that. I watched Senior, Robert Downey Jr.'s documentary about his dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't know much of anything about his father.
I just know he existed.
Yeah,
and was like in the industry.
He's a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And he's like one of those art for art's sake, like filmmaker. So it would just like be these kooky fucking films that I saw a lot of in art school.
Oh, sure.
A lot of that. And I dated a guy like that, and so I get it. And I actually did see inadvertently I had seen one of his films that he wrote and directed in the 90s called Hugo Pool with Alyssa Milano.
I vaguely remember
Downey.
That existing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like on one of my, when I was on my kick to watch everything that Robert Downey Jr. was in, that's when I watched it. It was good, but this was like a really sweet love letter to his dad. And what I was hoping wouldn't happened that he died while they were making it. And so it takes like a really sad, but it's also just really sweet to watch RDJ with RDS and just interact together, to see a human side of him. I watched Violent Night. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a movie made for Camila.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. Mm-hmm. That is every Christmas from here on out. Great. Forever and ever. Mm-hmm. Amen. David Harborough, that's his name, right?
Harbor. Just like where you put your ship.
Perfect balance between I am a sweet Santa Claus to, and I care and love children dearly, and I'm going to do everything I can to protect this child too. I will fucking rip your goddamn neck out if you touch this baby. And just like, he's just so perfect for it. I can't imagine anybody else pulling it off quite as well. And, I also love messy rich families.
Yes.
Rich family drama.
Beverly D'Angelo was great.
God bless her.
Yeah.
All the time.
Let's name drop. I did interview Beverly D'Angelo earlier this year in advance of her Steel City Con appearance. And she was like, and I did another Christmas movie. It's an action movie with David Harbour. And I remember thinking, that feels like it's not really going to come out. And I'm glad it did.
Yeah. And I'm glad you were wrong. Mm-hmm. And I watched Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I am not the target audience. I've reached the point.
Is that a generational thing?
Generation.
Yes.
Because you neither are that generation nor kind of want to sleep with anyone in the movie.
Right.
Those are the two.
And also that now that I'm a parent,
it
sets a whole new tone of like, this is shit I got to worry about, like protecting my kid from.
Oh my God, I wouldn't have thought of that because I'm not a parent. Wow.
Right, exactly. It's like, so this is like the view now. This is like the glasses in which I'm watching these films. But also, like, I was like really kind of bummed about the movie all the way through until we got to the end. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
This shit is funny.
Yeah. So I haven't seen this movie and I don't plan to, but I
feel like you would kind of like it.
I think you might.
I don't know. Well, Colin and my friend Erica went to see it. It was the day I got in my booster. And I was like, I'm getting booster tired. I'm going to skip it. And Colin came home. And he was like, I don't think you would have liked it. It's really intense. In a way that you tend not to like.
It is, yeah.
I have to be in the right mood for it, I guess, is where we are at. Mm-hmm. But his description of the end, I was like, I kind of want to see just that.
Right. I mean, it's just like, and to me, and that's always just kind of like the things that when I'm looking at a lot of these TikTok challenges and stuff, I'm just like, that would be real stupid way.
It has an ending I haven't seen before. And do you know how many of these movies I've seen?
Right, exactly. So,
great job.
It was absolutely so I was like completely just like, you know, two stars up until we got to the ending. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give you three. And I like it.
And I love a tiny, tiny cast. You never see another human being in this movie. And that's fun.
And it was also, I really also love the breakdown where they all are turning against each other. And I also enjoyed the, a good read, of each other, you know, a close knit group of friends telling each other what they really think of each other. So
your parents are upper middle class. No, they're not. I also saw many things. Till is a good example of a movie. If I don't know to say I recommend it,
right,
because it's very, very tough, but I alluded to this earlier. I don't know how I'm gonna pick between Danielle Deadwyler and Stephanie
Sue.
No, I'm getting my categories crossed. I don't know how I'm going to pick between Danielle Deadwyler and Michelle Yeoh.
Wow.
Oh.
For best actress.
Wow.
And really, I think I might have to vote for Danielle Deadwyler because it's so powerful.
Right.
And as good as Michelle Yeoh is, I don't sit watching Everything Everywhere All at Once going, how did you achieve this?
Right.
And that's kind of how I feel about Till.
And you are voting in an organization where ties are possible.
Where ties are possible.
I assume that's what you said we'll put a pin in it for.
And frequent.
Yes. Sean and I are both, I take credit for this too, personally responsible for
Lady Gaga having an acting award. So it is mainly an acting masterclass. It's well directed. Wow. It's well made. I'm not going to tell you it's a film. You know, it's mainly about the acting, but what acting there is. Let's... Triangle of Sadness. Let's stop pretending that this movie is going to pass beyond film nerds into the average culture, because
I don't think it's going to pass into the average culture. I still think it has awards juice in it.
It might. There's some great performances.
I think it's either getting a screenplay or potentially Dolly DeLeon getting the Oscar nomination. I think more likely to get a screenplay nomination.
I think it has merit. I still gave it like 3 stars and hated watching it.
Okay, I enjoyed watching it, sort of, kind of.
Here's how I would pitch it, positive or negative. I suppose that trying to vomit in a toilet because you were served fancy rich people food on a severely rocking ship, but not being able to throw up because the ship is still rocking and you're sliding back and forth across the bathroom floor, I suppose that's funny. If that sounds like something you'd like to watch, go ahead.
Here's my secret, not a secret. I fast forwarded through most of the vomit poop part of the movie. And it makes it a lot better.
I would imagine.
I mean, that's a lot. It boils down, I know that not every movie has a neat protagonist and antagonist. Who do we like in that movie?
No one.
Yeah, not a single person.
Why would you?
So at the 2-hour and 20-minute mark, I'm like, wrap it up.
Yeah.
I don't care. Anyway, nobody cares about Triangle of Sadness except film nerds. I don't know. I could talk about Jaws 2 for a while.
I was astonished to see your, what did you give it?
3.5.
Three. That's the most anyone has ever liked Jaws 2. Isn't that the movie where Michael Caine was like, terrible movie, bought a great house?
No, that's Jaws 4.
Oh, okay. All right. Then maybe I'm being unfair to Jaws 2.
Jaws 2 is the one that people are like, it's not good. If you compare it to Jaws, it's a disaster. If you compare it to the Jaws 3 and 4, it's pretty good.
Okay.
Jaws is maybe my favorite movie of all time. I've never watched any of the sequels.
Sure.
I decided to jump in. And I guess if you're this direct sequel to my favorite movie of all time, you're going to have enough of the stuff from my favorite movie of all time that I'm going to like it a little bit.
Fair enough.
But just know, if you ever watch Jaws 2, just know that the entire economic and political structure of the town is intact. No one lost their job. No one was voted out. The town council is still there. And when Brody, who just blew up a shark a couple years ago, is like, I think there might be another shark, everyone again goes, there's not another shark.
Oh, I mean, Sean, look around you in 2023.
That's true. It was more prescient than you thought. And I'll just wrap it up by recommending, if you're weird like me, you gotta dive into Adult Swim Yule Log. Do you two know about this?
I have seen other people say, just watch it.
The best part is that it was dropped first on Adult Swim and almost immediately on HBO Max with no explanation whatsoever.
Right.
It was just like, here's the Adult Swim Yule Log. And it's a normal Yule Log for 2 minutes, and then a horror movie starts happening around the Yule Log.
Oh, really?
And at first, it's the camera's still on the Yule Log, and you're hearing things. Huh. And then it pans back, and then it pans back a little bit more. And eventually, it gets very, like, Adult Swim absurd.
How long is it?
It's like 90 minutes.
Aww. I'm interested.
I would be interested if it were 20 minutes.
know that it goes full wacky. Like at the beginning... The thing I like about it, for the reason I gave it a good score, is for a big chunk of it, it's like watching theater. Mm. Because for a good half hour, 45 minutes, the camera has panned back from the fireplace to show the whole room. Mm. And it's happening in real time, and I really like that a lot.
Ah.
Eventually, we get to like aliens and alternate dimensions and light time travel, and we're like, all right, you're kind of pushing it a little bit here. But it's just so fun. They did the season premiere of Rick and Morty, and then they were like, and now the Yule Log, and a fully produced movie happened that they had never announced.
That's amazing.
And if you go to it on HBO Max, it's like a cozy Yule Log for the holidays. Like, no explanation.
I want to hear from the folks who put it on
as
a Yule Log. It was just like, you know,
I saw several people do that on Twitter where it was like they thought that it would be a Yule Log and like maybe occasionally there would be like Rick and or Morty making a joke in the background, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
Just throw it on. It's like mixed company, like the families.
Oh, and there's a brutal off-screen murder at like 6 minutes. The guy was like, we really wanted it to be just the Yule Log for 2 full hours and then the movie.
Oh, geez, but, no one's going to last that long.
And then we turned it down to 10 minutes and that felt like 2 hours. So then we agreed on 2 minutes. It's the guy that did, he has a series on Adult Swim that I haven't, it's called like Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell or something. He did Too Many Cooks.
Oh, I love Too Many Cooks.
Yeah, it's the Too Many Cooks.
All right,
cooks
you finally sold me on it.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that more than it's good, I'm just glad that it happened and it existed. So, that was a lot of stuff. Yeah. Let's move on to drawing a movie. We're flying blind.
All right.
Whatever happens, happens. With a movie at number 1001, which is... Well, did you like... color, and did you like singing? Because you're getting more of those two things when we take a look at Mary Poppins.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid. This might be fun.
I got a free Blu-ray I've never opened.
Is it the original one? Or is it...
This is neither. What's the bad Disney movie about writing Mary Poppins? Mr. something?
Banks?
Saving Mr. Banks. This is not Saving Mr. Banks. This is not Mary Poppins Returns. This is the... The OG, Dick Van Dyke and Penguins, Dancing Penguins, recognizable tunes.
I do enjoy Dick Van Dyke. It's just, I don't know. I had come up with a very strong feeling about Mary several years ago.
And about Mary Poppins?
Yes.
What's about, that? Tell us.
She's a bitch. I didn't like the way she handled things. I don't know. We'll see if that still flies. I don't know if I was just in a pissy mood that day or what, but I watched it in my adulthood and was like, fuck Mary. And
tell me this is 2 hours and 19 minutes long. I thought this was short.
No, man, it's a whole lot. It's a whole fucking production of tap dancing and fantasticalness and Mary being snotty.
But Dick Van Dyke dances with the penguins.
That's, I mean, I do enjoy. I enjoy
whole 30 seconds.
I enjoy a lot of the song, some of the songs. And Dick Van Dyke is enjoyable when he tap dances and does his. What is it? What's the accent?
Cockney.
Cockney. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's terrible Cockney.
I mean, hey, it's a classic, well known, important. It is a much better subject for a podcast than On a Clear Day. You can see.
Yeah, we will see. Like I said, we'll see. How I feel about old Mary.
Well, before
2023.
And then we got a movie draft to look forward to. So,
yay.
But before we get to that, let's see how you do with the hits of 53 years ago.
1970.
On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever. Hit number one, going with the number one date, which was September 9th of 1970. What was the number one song in America?
War.
Mm.
The song or the band?
I don't know which one. War.
What was it War of the Band?
I know, and I don't know. I didn't know there was a joke.
I'm just stunned that you hit the bullseye just like that.
Are you kidding me?
Correct. War.
Is it the song?
The song. Which is the, what is it good for?
Awesome! I'm so glad that we were able to wrap that up quickly.
Because that could have gone on for a long time. Right.
Yes.
Edwin Starr. That's the thing that confuses me, is that I always see the band War and get the song War in my head, which has nothing to do with the funk band War.
I thought they were the same.
No.
I thought it was like, War does War.
No. Edwin Starr does War, but what? Wow. It's
Thank God.
Here you go. War, what is it good for? Correct.
Yeah. And like wrap it all back up. ESP. Maybe that's... Maybe
there you go.
Yeah.
Maybe I have the site now.
Didn't you nail it last week?
Yeah, but that was, you know, like personal experience. Like,
right.
I mean,
nevertheless,
that was NKOTB.
Right, this is your past life.
Yeah, this is. Like right at the tail end, because I was born in 76.
Right.
Right.
So maybe I was on my way out in 1970, just in time.
As a grandma.
Yes.
You were a grandma complaining about this loud music.
No.